welcome in on this Saturday night at 9. My name is Bill Jenkins, and this is Open Mind, and I'm delighted to have you along. It's one of those nights that we want to, well, challenge your open mind. Do you have one? We'll go into some new vistas of thought, some new things that are going on that you may not have dreamed could possibly be happening, but they are. And to help us explore those, we have on our conference line from Sedona, Arizona, one of our favorites here on Open Mind, a man who has contributed so much to it and so much to the world in which we live, in fact. I want you to say hello to Dr. Patrick Flanagan. Pat, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bill. Welcome to be aboard, and also, you know, my lovely wife, Gail Crystal Flanagan, is also on.
Gail Crystal.
Hi,
how are you, Gail? You're in the other room now? Both of you have been working so hard and have done so much. Patrick is the author of Pyramid Power. The age of 14, he invented an incredible little device called the Neurophone, which... Well, tell us about the Neurophone, Patrick. It sort of defies most comprehension, I think.
Well, when I was... I've been an inventor since I was 8 years old. And when I was 12 years old, 13, I guess, I read a book by Hugo Gernsback, who is the founder of Gernsback Publications. It was a science fiction book written in 1912. And in that book, the hero had a device that could transmit information directly to the brain, that is, directly through... a channel other than the ears, directly to the brain. And when he went to bed at night, he could program dreams into his brain, or he could program information like languages, things like that. And I wanted one of those. And the book stimulated a series of events that eventually, about 6 months later, led to the development of the Neurophone, which is an electronic device that transmits sound through the skin directly to the brain. And what most people don't realize is that the skin is a latent hearing organ. That is, all of our organs of sense evolve out of the skin, the eyes, the ears, all of these things. And, for example, the skin is light sensitive or photosensitive, and the skin is also vibration sensitive. And to our surprise, in the development over these years, we've discovered that the actual mode of operation of the Neurophone is that we take ordinary sound, convert it into an electronic configuration that vibrates the skin internally, and then the skin transmits the sound to the brain through another channel. And you might say, well, if we have ears, why should we want to transmit sound through another channel to the brain? And the fact is that the skin channel, being more primitive, goes to deeper areas of the brain, that is, deeper areas of thought, so that it's possible through the Neurophone to learn languages, to program affirmations, to use it as a learning machine, because it transmits information to a much deeper level of the brain than the ordinary acoustic channels used by the ears.
Well, not only that, I have learned in using the Neurophone that I have that music becomes quite an experience whenever you have the little electrodes attached to the skin.
Absolutely. And by the way, we have a stereo Neurophone now.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
And are you teasing me?
Yes, I am.
No, he's
wonderful.
Not. It's true.
No, it's true. I am teasing you, but no, we do have a stereo Neurophone.
Well, by teasing, I mean...
I'm teasing you because you don't have one.
I don't have one.
Right.
That's right. And in fact, I don't have the Neurophone now. But, well, I have it, but one of the little electrodes is busted. I've got to send that to you, right?
Well, you know, if we remember right now, I'm going to write that down so I can send you a new set of electrodes for it.
It is a great learning device. It also has another fascinating side effect, the Neurophone. In that, for some reason or another, and Patrick, I don't know whether you figured it out or not, why, that when you use it, that stimulates the endorphins, and it is probably one of the finest painkillers in the world, is just to attach the Neurophone.
I recall you had the first time you used it, you had a broken ankle.
Yes, I broke my foot skiing down the slopes of San Moritz heading for the lodge because there was a lovely young lady. But no, actually, I was getting out of the car at Bob's Big Boy. But the other story is far more romantic. And I had some time to sit and work with the Neurophone, and I noticed that when I put it on, this intense pain in my broken foot, I broke two metatarsals in the foot,
wow,
went away.
Well, you know, a number of physiologists consider that the skin itself is a second brain, because the skin has a myriad of complex functions that enable it to perform miracles, literally. And one of the things about the skin is that, of course, acupuncture works through the skin, and it's been established that when the skin is stimulated by means of needles, that endorphins are created. And with the Neurophone, we stimulate the skin with a internal vibration. You know, the Neurophone electrodes vibrate in a digital manner, that is, in a square wave manner,
mm-hmm.
and they vibrate the skin internally, and this intense vibration internally in the skin causes apparently a secondary information transfer to the brain. And it's my theory that the Neurophone stimulates the skin in much the same way as acupuncture stimulation, without the need of electric shock or needles, because when you use the Neurophone, there is no discomfort whatsoever, only pleasure.
Well, I know that it is the best painkiller that I've ever experienced.
And we use it, Bill, in conjunction with some healing sounds. Om, for example. You know that Om tape we did in the pyramid? Well, I played that through a cassette tape in conjunction with the Neurophone. And
the Om tape that all of you made in the pyramids one time?
Right.
How many of you were in the pyramid?
Let's see, I think
18.
18 of you were making this kind of sound?
Right. That's the one.
Tell us about that sound that we're hearing.
Okay, well, in ancient, of course, you know, in the Bible, the beginning was the Word, and of course, in various sounds have powerful effects on our bodies. And as a matter of fact, in India, when they used the Sanskrit language, many of the sounds were used in a healing manner, and they were used to stimulate changes in consciousness. And the Om is considered to be one of the most powerful sacred sounds. It's said to be the sound of the creation of the universe. And so when we were in the pyramid, the king's chamber of the pyramid is actually resonant. It's got a powerful resonance at what is called scientific C, which is 256 cycles per second. And the dimensions of the room are, the height, width, and depth of the room are such that all the resonances are in perfect harmony with one another. That is, they create a perfect musical chord. So when the people, when we were all in the pyramid, one of the things we did in order to relax and get in a more receptive mood for whatever might happen that evening was to chant the word Om over and over again in unison. So at that time, I set up a professional Sony Walkman tape recorder with a special microphone system right in the center of the king's chamber. And then we all, 18 of us, chanted. But because the room has very hard walls, that is, that means that the echoes last for a long time. Because it has such hard walls, the sounds of our voices were multiplied over and over again by these reflections. And the end result is that it sounds like an entire chorus of people. And it also has that tremendous depth of resonance, that musical harmony that I mentioned earlier of the king's chamber.
Well, let's listen for just a moment.
Sure.
18 people in the king's chamber of the Great Pyramid in Egypt doing Om. Just simply 18 people chanting Om in the
right.
King's chamber. So what else have you been up to, you two?
Well, Gail and I, Gail has something very exciting to talk about in a moment about something that's going on in Yugoslavia. But in our home, of course, we've been extremely creative because we've spent a lot of time in our laboratory. We've been working especially on water. As you know, I've spent a good portion of my life trying to unravel the secrets of water, because water is really the secret of life and the effect of water on the living system. And in doing so, have developed a new form of water that, through a series of events that we call energy crystal water. And it's Gail and I have been working on perfecting that water now for the last year. And the water a year ago was fantastic, but the water now is several orders of magnitude improved.
We took it every day, by the way. Remember that six-month fast we went on?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the water sustained us through that whole time. We were taking large amounts of it during that 6 months when we were just on liquids.
Well, I'm taking large amounts of it. You really get hooked on the water.
I know. It's wonderful.
I even put some in the spa. It makes it just as silky smooth as it can be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What it does is it creates a restructuring of the water. You know, water is a liquid crystal. And in our bodies especially, water is highly structured and even more crystalline. That is, as a liquid crystal. And the body has to work very hard. In fact, it's estimated that up to a third of our energy is utilized in restructuring the fluids that we take into our bodies. So that they can be utilized by the body. And so what we do is we've created a method of increasing the electrical charge in the water so that the water is structured before we drink it. And the end result is that the water goes right into the system and begins to do its work with very little effort. And also, it may act as a carrier for nutrients into the system so that it improves the absorption of nutrition.
Mm. Well, it tastes good. Makes you want to, you never want to drink any other kind of water. You certainly feel better about it.
Right.
The surface tension of the water that's been treated with it seems to be much lower.
Right.
Is that true?
Yes, that's true, because as the water becomes structured, as it gains energy, because this water does have several hundred times as much energy than ordinary water, as the water gains energy, it reduces in surface tension. And that's part of the product. For example, the water in the body in vivo has a very low surface tension compared to ordinary water outside the body. And our water is simply matching the surface tension that's already in the body so that it can more easily penetrate into the cells.
Well, you're into all kinds of things.
Yes.
Dr. Patrick Flanagan, author of Pyramid Power. I know that one of the reasons I love to have you on the show, the both of you, is that we can freewheel it tonight. Because Patrick knows a great deal about most anything. And we would like to open up the lines, if you don't mind, to those that want to talk to Patrick and to Gail. The Los Angeles number is 520. They all end in talk. The San Fernando Valley, 990. And it's your chance to get straight scoop on most anything. Patrick is into energy. He is into ELFs. He is into scalar interferometry. All of those things that we love to talk about. In Orange County, the number is 750, and Glendale, Dr. Patrick Flanagan, Gail Flanagan, are both with us here tonight, speaking to us in the conference line from Sedona, Arizona, which is quite a little power spot in itself out there, isn't it, gang?
Oh, it certainly is. It's the flip side of Tibet.
The flip side of Tibet. Now, what does that mean?
Well, in other words, it's at the same level as Tibet and on the other side of the earth. And it's interesting, Sedona is a very sacred spot to the Hopi Indians. And it's kind of like a miniature Grand Canyon. It's very mystical and extremely powerful. There are seven energy vortices here. They're actual energy, magnetic, gravitational anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting that during the International Geophysical Year, when they did a satellite survey of the earth for pollution, that is radioactive pollution all over the earth, because the prevailing winds carry fallout all over the earth from the radioactive tests, that when they examined the entire surface of the earth and published a map, the map was in shades of gray. The darker the gray, the more radioactive pollution, and the lighter the gray, there was less pollution. And there were only two spots on the entire planet Earth that were absolutely white, that is, had no radioactive pollution. One of these spots was Sedona, Arizona, and the other spot was the top of Mount Shasta there in California.
How about that? And did you know that Congress has a bill before it right now to irradiate all of our food with radioactivity?
Well, you know, the only difference between genius and stupidity, you know, there's no limit.
Some of the food, they want to irradiate it with 4,000 rads.
Really? Wow.
And, of course, we get about what? Less than one rad whenever you get a chest X-ray?
Of course.
And that's before the House of Representatives right now. It's just a marvelous bit of political nonsense that's going on.
And considering, you know, the soil is denatured already, you know, and there's hardly any vitamins in it by the time you get it, and then you cook out the rest of it, people are eating food that's almost useless.
Well, the idea is to have all the food going down a conveyor line, and the little slot opens up and radiates some at some degree and some at the other, ostensibly, I suppose, to kill bacteria and to stunt the growth of your onions so they won't grow in your cupboard. But I really don't want to eat radioactive food myself.
Well,
But Congress has a better idea, and of course we know the great minds of our time all reside in the Congress of the United States.
Surely you jest.
I do jest.
Speaking of power spots, Bill, something very exciting has happened, and I'm sure that most of your listeners haven't heard of it as yet, because we just have. Our friend just came back from Yugoslavia, and there's been, for 3 years, six visionaries have had an apparition of a being, a luminous being, who calls herself the Queen of Peace, otherwise known as the Blessed Mother, and she's been appearing daily to these six children for 3 years. This is when the film was made, so now it's over 3 years. And I have a video of it, which is available to people if they do want to order it. I can give the information if they write to our company.
Okay.
But anyway, they photograph the children as they're in this trance state, speaking to this luminous being who calls herself the Queen of Peace. Anyway, and they're outside of time and they're outside of space. They don't react to light or being touched. They're oblivious to all that goes on around them. And this fact has been established by doctors and personal examinations. And people for 3 years have been coming by the tens of thousands. Have you heard of this, Bill?
Now, where is it happening?
It's in Yugoslavia, a little town called Medjugorje.
Medjugorje. No, I haven't heard of it. I've heard of a similar situation that happened right outside of Cairo.
Right.
7 or 8 years ago, and Raymond Bayless and some of the people from the Southern California Society for Psychic Research have gone into extensive research on that, and tens of thousands, of hundreds of thousands of people watched that happening outside of one of the churches over there for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's amazing because it's happening now every single day for 3 years, and people have reported all kinds of instantaneous healings and transformation of their lives and so forth. And the message is that the lady's message is one of peace. She desires to be called the Queen of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And asks that June 25th, every year, be celebrated in honor of peace. And it's interesting, too, because tomorrow, you know, on your lovely wife's birthday is our anniversary when Patrick and I were married inside the Great Pyramid.
That's one of your anniversaries, and the other
happy
one was
birthday,
on my birthday, I remember.
And
she said to say happy birthday to you. I mean, happy anniversary to you, because tomorrow is her birthday.
It's interesting. I don't know. I guess your listeners might know from you mentioning it, but Patrick and I were married twice, once in Egypt and once in the United States. And one time we were married on your birthday, and the other time on Evelyn's.
We were very honored.
But we didn't even know it was your birthday.
I was very honored anyway.
Right. It makes it doubly significant.
Yeah,
and
the
night of the second wedding, which was October 11th, which was
October
7th. I'll never forget that day.
I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning with the idea for the Planetary Peace Corps. I sent you a globe, I'm sure.
I have got three of those globes. We have one.
I told you, I was sure. Anyway, the name of the product is Hug Your Other Mother, and it goes very well with some of the visionary descriptions of what the Queen of Peace has said helps the world. In other words, you can suspend natural law through prayer and fasting. And if all of us will unite in this vision of peace and do this daily, we can stave off a lot of the catastrophes that are imminent. Right.
Well, you know, you create a lot of conversation over at our house because you sent us a simple little blow-up globe, right? There
uh-huh.
it is.
Well, that's part of it. You take the globe and you hold it.
Hold it and hug it. And we just leave it laying on the floor, and it kind of bounces from one room to the other, and it's there like one of the cats or dogs are there. And they said, what is that on the floor over there? I said, oh, have you hugged Mother Earth today? So everybody hugs Mother Earth, so... It is there. It's a part of the decor of the house.
Well, you know, we could make it a global reality. Could you imagine thousands and thousands of people every day at a certain time, and we give the times when you sign up. There's a one-time lifetime membership, and then you get your globe, and you also become an official mother hugger, and you get a card.
Evelyn wanted to know where her card was. I got mine, but she didn't.
Oh, I thought I sent her one. I'll send her another one.
Okay.
You know, and the idea is from the old Sanskrit saying that energy follows thought. So if you can imagine all the members of the Planetary Peace Corps, and it's just really taking off. It's been in effect for about a year now. And people are real excited about it, and hopefully there will be thousands and thousands more hugging their globe simultaneously. you know, encompassing, visioning light encompassing the globe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wonderful. Anyway, if anybody wants to know more about Medjugorje, they can, the information comes automatically when you sign up to be a mother hugger.
All right.
And we'll give our address and our number because it's changed from the last time.
Okay.
Can we give it now?
All right, go ahead and give it now.
Okay, get your pencils. It's Flanagan Research, P.O. Box 686, Novato, N-O-V-A-T-O, California, and the zip code is 94948. And our telephone number is 415-892-7594. And the information, as I said, when you sign up to become a mother hugger, you get the information on Medjugorje. And, you know, and also the globe and your mother hugger card
and all kinds
other
of
goodies.
All
and
kinds
also
of
any information you want on our product
right.
to be gotten the same way.
The calls are beginning to light up.
Okay.
Are you guys ready to take a few?
We're always ready.
Well, we'll take a few moments of Om and then be back in just a moment with Dr. Patrick Flanagan and Gail Flanagan. Vince, hello,
oh.
Vince. Welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I listened to your show. It's really very enchanting. I wanted to first say that Sedona is really a wonderful place, and it was very peaceful and tranquil, and I never knew why, but I think I understand it better now.
You got the skinny from Patrick, did you?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I wanted to ask Patrick and Gail about, I'm a psychologist myself, and I wanted to ask them about the neurophone, because I'm quite interested. It sounds very interesting, and the skin is, incidentally, very closely related to the brain. It struck a familiar chord when he was talking about that, so I wanted to learn a little more about it. If he could just tell me a little about it now, I could perhaps use one.
Sure. The neurophone, again, is an alternate channel into the brain. It's being used by a number of psychologists and psychiatrists. And, in fact, people from many different disciplines are using the neurophone because of this. But basically, over a period of time, we have built up what is known as the function of selective hearing through our normal ears. And this is both a boon and it's also a detriment, if you know what I mean. Because, for example, if something's going on in the environment that you want to tune out, most of us, if not all of us, have the ability to simply turn off our hearing internally so that whatever is coming in is not being absorbed. And this is why sleep learning, for example, doesn't work very well. Because when you're trying to program the brain, when you're going into a state of sleep, the only time that your brain is listening is when you're in the what's called the alpha state. And after that, your hearing simply turns off and none of the information goes in. However, with the neurophone, since it is another channel, an alternate channel into the brain, it transmits into a deeper level. And the end result is that we've determined, or at least we believe from the research and experiments that we've run, that it bypasses the selective hearing function. And the end result is that it tends to program the long-term memory banks in a more direct fashion. People who use the neurophone, for example, for learning language, find that they can learn language in about one-third the normal time required by listening to the language through the ears. Also, the neurophone can be used as a subliminal device. That is, you can use it to transmit subliminal affirmations regarding anything you want, any problems you have, things like that. And we tend to encourage people to make up their own affirmation tapes along certain guidelines. And so the neurophone has many, many uses like that.
Oh, I see. I wanted to also, I wanted to ask about subliminal learning, and this is similar to that, and I guess you've answered that question. It is a form of subliminal learning?
Yes. Well, the neurophone can be used consciously or subliminally.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know, just the definition of subliminal simply means that you can transmit information into the brain that bypasses consciousness entirely. And the way we do that with the neurophone is that you simply do that by adjusting the level of the signal that goes into the brain.
Now,
in other words, if you turn it up louder, you can hear and differentiate every word. If you turn the level on the neurophone down, you hear noise or you hear a signal, but you don't quite consciously get what's being said. And at that point, the information is being programmed directly into the brain.
So it's an auditory input.
Yes, it is an auditory input, yes.
Oh, I see.
Normally, the neurophone comes, it's a signal processing device, which, by the way, is quite small now. They used to be very large, and now that we've got it down to a very small size, we call it a Thinkman. It's about 3 inches by 6 inches by 1 inch in size. And we also have a stereo neurophone. And the advantage of the stereo neurophone is that you can stimulate alternately or simultaneously the left and right hemispheres of the brain, because this division, the function in the body, carries over to the skin also. In other words, there is a midline right down the center of the body,
mm-hmm.
where one side of your body has a positive charge and the other side has a negative charge, and we can measure this with an electrometer. And apparently this channel input from the skin follows the same line. For example, we've made small neurophone electrodes where you place the electrode on the skin. And if you move it, say, a quarter of an inch across that center line of skin, you can hear the signal transfer from one side of the brain to the other. And so using this function, you can transmit information into the brain to create what is known as entrainment. So that if you place, say, an alpha signal into the left and right hemispheres, it creates a phase coherence in the brain.
Do you use an ordinary audio tape?
Potential of the neurophone is actually limitless.
Do you use an auditory tape? Or
Again, auditory.
Just any, you can select anything you want?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Can you select a tape and then put it in the neurophone and use it to...
Yes, you can... we have a few tapes that we sell with the neurophone.
I see.
And you can... it's a wide open field. The neurophone, even though it was invented, say, 24... Actually, longer than that, about 27 years ago. It's taken this long to develop it, get it on the market. I haven't even told you the problems we had with the patent office. It took 12 years just to get a patent because they wouldn't believe it worked.
Mm-hmm.
We had to actually fly to Washington and demonstrate it to them before they'd give the patent. But the end result of that is that the field of neurophonics is wide open, and we would like to encourage people like yourself to develop the software for the neurophone. The neurophone is kind of like the first computer. It's a marvelous device, and the problem is figuring out how to best utilize it, and that's the development of tape, software, things like that for utilization with the neurophone.
It's available.
Really multifaceted. It's a very futuristic device. I mean, there isn't another device like the neurophone.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. You can actually experience hearing through your eyes. You can take the electrodes of the neurophone and place them on your eyelids, and you can actually hear through your eyes, which is quite an experience in itself. I've used it for various bruises and so forth. I would take the electrode and play it in conjunction with the Ohm tape, because I feel that you can affect healing on a cellular level with sound more readily than with words. In other words, my skin cells would probably heal faster to Ohm than they would me saying, you're feeling much better now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that on a very primitive level, as Patrick was talking about before, our skin can pick up these sounds that can accelerate healing.
Could I have your number again? I missed the 892. What's the telephone number?
892-7594.
Area code 415.
Yeah, right. That's in Nevada.
415-892-7594.
Okay, good. Great. I'll be contacting you.
Can I help you, Vince?
Thank
you very much.
By the way.
Thank you, Bill. You have a wonderful show.
Well, thank you. I hope that was helpful to you.
Very helpful.
You certainly got a lot of information out of them.
Right.
I'm glad you did.
We have a one-hour tape that describes the development of the neurophone. You know, everything that happened in the process of developing it over a 27-year period, and an audio tape that's a one-hour tape. So, and that's also available through our office.
Yeah, it's quite a story. In fact, you had to go up to the patent office yourself and let a person who was deaf hear Beethoven for the first time to the microphone to get that patent.
Yeah, well, it was quite an experience. In fact, the patent office rejected the application a number of times, and as people who are familiar with the patent office, if they reject an application a certain number of times, they close the file and say you can't have a patent. And what happened is they kept rejecting my patent application because they said this device could not technically exist.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they said that there was no prior technology. And usually, see, most inventions are improvements on old inventions.
Right.
And very few inventions are what you would call a basic invention. And so the result of that is that the patent office kept saying there's no prior patent, no prior technology, it can't possibly work. So finally, in frustration, after they closed the patent file, I flew to Washington and demonstrated the neurophone on a deaf employee of the patent office who happened to hear with the neurophone, and this was the first thing he had heard in a period of 13 years. And they reopened my file and gave me my patent, gave us the original filing date, everything. And by then I was so frustrated that was just the beginning. But
Well, the Patent Office, of course, is the source of great frustration. Its purpose is to encourage and protect the innovative inventor.
Right.
And it does not do that. In fact, Commissioner Duncan, involved in the Joe Newman case, has already been declared by a federal judge in Texas as incompetent, but yet they sit. And now in the House of Representatives, there's the bill before the House of Representatives to give Joe Newman his patent on his free energy device and to investigate the Patent Office as to why they haven't done it.
Right.
They sit there and see this thing work, but they say it violates the second law of thermodynamics, so therefore what we're seeing is obviously a hallucination or something. So the Patent Office.
For being ahead of the time.
So the Patent Office is a dinosaur, and there probably are going to be some great changes there in the not too distant future. We're 16 minutes away from 10 on this Saturday's Chamber. Let's move for just a second. 18 voices in the King's Chamber of the Giant Pyramid is doing a simple poem. You're on.
Okay.
How are you feeling?
Fine.
Do you like the arm?
I'd like to hear the Mormon Tabernacle Choir sing in there.
Sounds like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is in there. That's just 18 voices.
Fantastic. I'd like to know where one could get...
Your phone. You don't hear it through your ears at all.
Well, I've got skin all over my body, then it should work.
I hope so. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Not only that, you can put one of the little electrodes, say, on your arm and put another electrode on someone else's arm. In fact, you can have four or five people, and everybody joins hands, and everybody hears, right in your head, the music or whatever you happen to have on it.
Okay, we've got the price. Where can one get one?
The address we gave you earlier.
Okay, I have that.
686.
They'll send you all the information.
Fine.
And just write them there at that number.
Okay, that was just a side effect. The thing I wanted to talk about was, and I hope that skeptic who called in last week about and didn't believe about crystals is listening, because...
Yes, I remembered him.
I told you this before, Bill, that I did what you said. I put it in the fridge, and fortunately I didn't have to go through your hassle of freezing everything, because you said it did. So I turned it back between 2 and 3. Mine goes between 1 and 9. And it used to be set according to whether it was winter or summer, between 5 and 7. It is now between 2 and 3, and not only does it keep everything beautifully cold, but it cuts down on any spoilage. I don't know if that's a side effect, but I'm a bachelor, and I used to find all sorts of green stuff in the back of the refrigerator, down in the fruit and vegetable bin.
That's very normal. The veggies stay very crisp and tender.
Everything. There's no mold, no mildew.
How big is the crystal you're using?
One is about the size of my thumb.
Right.
And it comes to a point, and that's all I use.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the way we developed our crystal water. See, that the original work that we did was to put quartz crystals in water, and we found that the crystal altered the structure of the water, and only it was temporary. In other words, the minute you agitate or vibrate the water, it loses that structure. And somehow the same thing happens in your refrigerator. When you put that crystal in there, crystals, you know, have an enormous amount of energy stored in their system because they're so highly structured under great pressure. And the result of that is that the energy apparently radiates standing waves into the refrigerator in such a way that it restructures and actually reduces the entropy of everything in the environment and in that environment. And that's what makes your food last longer.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, how does one get your water? I mean, what must one do to get this crystallized water?
The same address.
If you call up our office or drop us a line, why, we'll send you a little sheet that describes the water and various things that we're into.
Wonderful.
Be prepared to get hooked on that water.
Well, I've been using Dr. Willard's water for... Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess 3 years now.
Well, that was a good start.
Yeah, Dr. Willard's water is a great start. It's he did a great service to the world when he brought out his water.
And the guy that works, says, "Well, what are you doing? How do you keep so slender? I tell him, but nobody listens. You know, they don't want that. Nobody wants to hear how they can stay young, look young. And I retired from my job 3 weeks ago at the age of 66.
Wow.
And I feel great.
Are you trying to gain weight like I am?
I could use a 15 or 20 pounds, yeah, but...
I eat like a horse. Doesn't do any good. I'm going to stay right here. 165, that's it. Skinny.
135.
Yeah.
5'11".
6'1", so...
Okay.
All right, Alan.
But I can go out of body and you can't, huh?
Really rub it in.
Talk to you later, and thank you very much.
All right.
For the Flanagan.
Thank you, Alan.
Right, bye.
All right. Larry, you're on.
Hi, I have a question for Dr. Flanagan. I'm trying to... first of all, I didn't hear how to get a hold of the Neurofarm.
Just write the Novato address that we gave you a minute ago. They'll give you all the information.
I didn't hear that at all. Can I get that address if I call the 415 number?
Yeah, you can.
401 is PO Box 686, Novato, California, 94948.
We'll get
how do you spell that, Novato?
N-O-V-A-T-O.
Okay, now I'd also like to know what kind of research has been done with a Neurofarm in terms of, I mean, obviously, if this is able to create endorphins through the system, it's got to be having some kind of... I'm a chiropractor.
Right.
And I have a great deal of interest in this in terms of pain control with the patients. When I put my patients down and start working on them, I use music or sounds that are very similar to what you're creating with your ohm and other things like that.
Right.
In the room, because it brings the patient down.
Are you a kinesiologist?
I've had some experience with kinesiology, but I'm not a kinesiologist per se.
Right. Well, Dr. Sheldon Deal, who is the president of the International College of Applied Kinesiology, that has now over 8,000 members, has written two papers on the Neurofarm and its effect in chiropractic. And basically what he has discovered is that the Neurofarm balances anything in the body that is not traumatic in nature. In other words, the electrical imbalances, stress imbalances, things like that. So that basically what he says is that when you use the Neurofarm, any kind of subluxations or anything like that are non-traumatic in origin will adjust it, will rebalance, and then you can go to work and work on those that are due to trauma.
Now, what kind of research has been done in terms of, I started to mention a moment ago, that if you're having effects on the endorphin systems, there has to be stimulation of the limbic system, sympathetic and parasympathetic systems.
Well,
have they been able to do like vascular researches and things too?
Well, there's not much research done on that yet, and we're hoping that some work will be done on actually measuring endorphins. The only thing that's been done vascularly with the Neurofarm was that he found out that it reduced the LDL content.
Oh.
In other words, when they use the Neurofarm on patients, that the light lipids decreased in the blood.
Lipoproteins.
But other than that, no one has actually measured the endorphin. The only thing that has been observed is time after time is that when people are in pain, many times when they put the Neurofarm on, the pain seems to go away. And we assume that it's endorphins, but we have no proof of that.
When you speak of the crystals that you were talking of earlier, I'm not sure of exactly what crystals you're speaking of.
Rock crystals.
Are you familiar with Dr. Reese?
Reese?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
Oh, he's an extremely heavy practitioner in crystal therapy. And he's been doing a lot of work with him over the last couple of years, especially.
You know, I just noticed I've got to be a practitioner in commercial opathy, whatever you call it.
Thank you very much for your time.
And we've got to do that. Thank you very much, Larry. Appreciate
Bye.
The call. This radio program without a nice little crystal sitting back there in Big Blue.
That's right. And, you know, it's estimated there are about 8 to 10 quartz circuits currently in all new automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also used as capacitors. And that means that they modify energy capacity in a circuit, blocking excessive flows. And it's also a safety gear featured, you know, it's a safety feature geared for the user's understanding. There are also transducers, which is an instrument that transmits energy from one system to another. Crystals are condensers, in that it can store a continual charge of vitality force field in solid form, which could, explain what the phenomena that occurs in the refrigerator. And it's also an energy force field, the sonic protection against static in and around an individual and their auras. And also it's a body balancer. With the passage of ions through the crystal's molecular structure, the body frequencies will be altered. So those are six things that I like to remind people of about crystals.
Also, if you stick one in your spa, you never have to put chlorine in.
Yeah, we have, you know how big, we have a 200-pound Cliff Lenorstal.
There's not much room left for Patrick and Gail, then.
Yeah, we used to wear it, but we just
All right, well, let's get back to our callers and see what's on their mind. Al, you're on.
Thank you, Bill. I'll be going to Boston next week on that venture capital situation I talked to Alan Braun on 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I remember, yes, indeed.
I'll be trying to help society with the first nutritious fast food franchise. I do want to mention to Patrick and Gail that I have the Ohm tape, and I use it every night. I have their Neurophone. And I was interested when he said some software development. My company also does endeavors in that area. I would like to talk to Patrick about that with the Neurophone maybe at another time.
You can leave your number with our secretary and we'll give you a call, okay?
Okay, very good, Gail. And I did want to mention I ordered your water tape to show me how to make my own purified water, and I haven't received it yet.
Oh, well, you can't. The water tape, you...
The water tape just talks about water, and it doesn't tell you how to make your own purified water.
Okay.
It tells ways in which water can be charged, but unfortunately, the big problem with it, as I mentioned earlier, is that this began when I started working with putting crystals in water and found out that the crystals altered the structure of the water and the surface tension, but it was temporary. The minute the water is agitated, in other words, you take the crystal out and the water is agitated, that goodness disappears. So I tried grinding up crystals, for example, ground up quartz and diamonds, things like that. I put that in the water. That helped it, but the problem is you can't drink ground up quartz and diamonds or they'll destroy your kidneys. So the next problem was to figure this out, and Willard, you know, had one solution along the way that was very interesting and perked me up, and then I studied the water from Hunzaland and discovered that the water in Hunzaland had little silica crystals in them that are are proper for ingestion. So we ended up creating a special multi-mineral colloidal highly charged structure that we put in the water that will change the water indefinitely, so you can agitate it, shake it up, and so forth, and it still charges the water. And when you drink it, it's compatible with the body because it's the way minerals are found naturally in nature in some areas, like in Hunzaland. And very complicated for you to try to make your own water.
Yes. Patrick, is that the concentrate that I think I purchased that from you and you add to distilled water?
Right, that's it.
Okay, I could definitely tell a taste difference. Are you mass producing that concentrate?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So I'll probably want to talk to you on that because I think it. I would like to also offer that product.
Just talk to Donnie, your secretary, and tell her that you talked to us on air and we told her to give us your number and we'll get in touch with you.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Al.
Best of luck in Boston, Al.
Thank you very much, Bill.
All right.
Okay, bye.
And we have Mike on the line. Mike?
Good evening, Bill. I have a question for Dr. Flanagan and Gail. With respect to the crystals in the water, now, when you have done the experimentation that were you just measuring the surface tension of the water, or are you going for other characteristics as well?
Well, surface tension is one. We've measured the dielectric constant, surface tension, infrared absorption. We've measured a number of factors so far and found that many of these factors alter in certain ways, showing that the structure of the water is actually that the water is more structured.
Okay, because in some of the research that I've done on it, where, you know, either keeping crystals in water and then measuring the, for lack of a better term, the energy coming off of it with a dowsing device.
Right.
I haven't noticed any decay of energy changes over the course of, let's say, 24 to 48 hour period of time. I didn't go beyond that because I figured that was enough.
See, I don't know about the dowsing, but as far as the actual physical structural change in the water, it does change. In other words, we're talking about, you know, a heart type measuring device rather than a psychic measuring device, and I don't know about the psychic energy effect of it, but I can tell you that the structure imparted to the water by the crystal does decay. In other words, if the water is agitated, for example, poured from one glass to another, it loses that structural integrity that was given to it by the crystal.
Yes, unfortunately, not having a lab totally at my disposal, I haven't been able to conduct those tests.
Right.
One thing at the beginning of the show when they were playing the Om tape, I happened to have a little quartz pyramid, and something just told me, why don't I go over and take a reading off of it while the Om tape was playing, and the thing damn near burned a hole in the center of my hand.
The powerful little pyramid.
It's a powerful tape. No, instead of quartz pyramid.
Yeah, it's a pure quartz pyramid.
Right.
Are you also familiar with the structures being common to the helix growth of the crystal and the angle of the pyramid?
Oh, of course, yes. Yeah. The cap or the apex of the quartz crystal is at the same angle as the side of the Great Pyramid.
I can barely hear you folks over the Om sound.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate
that. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
It just seemed like it belonged.
Yeah. When you look at the quartz crystal, you know, the termination on a quartz crystal, the walls of the crystal are more or less parallel and they're hexagonal in shape. And the very top of the crystal, the cap, bends over into a termination. And if you measure that angle, you find that that's the same angle as the side of the Great Pyramid. Also, the refractive index of quartz is the same as the angle of the Great Pyramid.
Mm-hmm. In addition to which, it's the same helical structure as the RNA-DNA molecule, which we all know is all purely coincidental between the three.
Right.
Okay, well, I was just kind of curious as to the research you have been doing back here. I'm kind of planning on getting back to Sedona probably in January, so I'll get a hold of your Northern California office, and maybe we can make contact.
Great, okay.
Yeah, thank you, Bill, for the time.
What I add about the pyramid is you were holding a pyramid as you were listening to the Om tape. What I do sometimes is I take certain crystals, and to charge them, I'll put them in front of the speaker while the Om tape is playing.
Well, this particular one I've got sitting just kind of off to the side and having one face to magnetic north.
Right.
And I just figured, well, you know, why don't I go ahead and measure it? And
you generally feel energy coming off of the top of that pyramid anyway, don't you?
Yeah, but not by a factor of 5 increase.
Oh, really?
Without a thought for it.
But just by playing the tape?
Just by playing that little piece of music right there.
That Om tape contains the resonance of the Great Pyramid itself, so it would resonate with any other pyramid that has the same structure.
And by the way, you might be interested in knowing that while we made that tape, we were fortunate enough, the Egyptian government, first of all, gave us special permission to spend the night in the pyramid. They also unlocked the Queen's Chamber, which is always locked, and they let us put in these tiny Giza crystals, which had been underwater for a year prior to the night that we spent during the Palladian alignment 2 years ago to the day tomorrow. Anyway, and these little crystals were placed inside the Queen's Chamber the night that we made that tape. So Patrick and I, since there was such a limited amount of them, Patrick and I wanted to figure out how we could share this experience with people. So what we did was we took a little Giza crystal, we climbed to the top of the pyramid, we charged them on top of the pyramid too. We had a bag full of these crystals, and we took pieces of the apex of the Great Pyramid of Giza, and we ground these up homeopathically, and we molded them into the little tiny mini Giza pyramids. And those are available also, and they're very powerful. So they contain a piece of the Great Pyramid, crystals that were charged in the Queen's Chamber, lavulite, sujulite, lapis, and some other magical stone blends, and they're very powerful also. So that's the pyramid I thought you were speaking of initially.
Oh, no.
Those are available also. Bill, you have one.
I have one. Yes, I sure do.
All the people on the planet have one.
Can't you just see these two, Mike? Mm-hmm. Here they are climbing up the pyramid. With a bag of all of this, and they spent their wedding night on top of the Great Pyramid.
That's right.
Well, I thought I was...
Many people could stay back.
Not too many.
That's true. It takes almost the moral equivalent of act of God in Congress in Egypt to get into the pyramids overnight, from what I understand.
We were lucky. I have spent the night in the pyramid before in 1974, and I had to bribe my way in, but bribing your way in is now virtually impossible. We were lucky for this particular night. We actually were able to obtain permission from the Egyptian Department of Antiquities to spend the entire night in the pyramid.
So we spent the 3 days of the Palladian alignment, which is astrologically a most auspicious occasion.
In fact, the comet right now, the Halley's Comet, is going through Pleiades right now. And exactly tomorrow is our anniversary when we were in the pyramid. And the Halley's Comet is going through the Pleiades constellation right now in alignment with it.
That's where you see it.
That's interesting because I think there's been also an increase of, shall we say, UFO activity reports as well, if I'm not mistaken, from what I've been hearing.
Oh,
right.
Sure. We saw a UFO that night.
I can believe that very sincerely.
You know, I lied also inside the king's chamber with crystals placed. I mean, in the king's chamber, in the sarcophagus, with crystals placed on all our chakras. So we had crystal initiations that night, too. It was an incredibly powerful night.
Gail is quite obviously into crystals.
I think the appropriate term, Bill, she's a bigger basic crystal junkie.
I only carry 30 pounds.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Dr. Patrick Flanagan and his lovely wife, Gail. And we have sort of an open line, open forum discussion about, well, anything that just may be on your mind, okay? The year is... Hi, John.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I have a question for Dr. Flanagan, if I may ask.
You certainly may. Go right ahead.
Dr. Flanagan, I would like to know about the Mobius strip, a geometrical shape that has one side and one edge, I believe.
Right.
And I would like to know how to make a left-hand Mobius strip versus a right-hand Mobius strip.
Right.
In other words, if I had a piece of paper, say 12 inches long, 1 inch wide, how do I know if I'm making a left-hand or a right-hand twist?
Hold the end in your right hand away from your body, and hold the end in your left hand toward your body, so that, you know, that the paper is flat and parallel.
I see.
Okay, now, twist the end that's closest to your body one half turn clockwise, and then wrap it around and join the ends, and that's a left hand twist. If you twist it one half turn counterclockwise, that's a right hand Mobius.
I see. One half turn clockwise is a left hand.
Yeah, that's if you're twisting the end that's closest to your body. Yeah.
I see. So if I had a piece of paper in front of me and my right hand is far from my body holding it, and my left hand is close to my body holding it.
Right. So that it's vertical to your body. Right.
Vertical.
No,
I was
no,
making.
What I mean is that it's pointing at your body. Like
yes, pointing. I see. Perpendicular to my body.
Right.
And I turn my left hand clockwise one half,
right,
and then connect. That's right. A left hand.
Right. It's called an earth resonance generator. That's a little 8 hertz oscillator that feeds electric signal into a left hand Mobius antenna.
Oh.
And this then generates an energy field that counteracts ELF signals.
Oh.
And so you can also do the same thing with a multi-wave oscillator or whatever. Any energy that goes through the left-hand Mobius will generate a beneficial field.
That's what I was interested in.
Right.
And may I ask just one last question?
Sure.
Is there any significance, let's say, is one type of band, a left-hand or a right-hand, more receptive to tapping tachyon energy? Can a Mobius strip do that?
Oh, yes. Well, they both are, but see, we're talking about magnetic monopoles also.
I see.
And in other words, you have a left-hand rotating magnetic monopole and a right-hand rotating, and the left-hand Mobius generates a left-hand monopole, and the right-hand Mobius generates a right-hand monopole, and also they're both tuned to either one.
I see.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, John.
I might add that the Mobius is just one geometric configuration that has powerful ramifications health-wise and consciousness-wise. There's an artist by the name of Richard Wood who has incorporated the use of these geometric configurations into an artistic form. I believe he has an exhibit now at the Museum of Science and
right.
Industry. Isn't that Patrick?
Right.
He makes the most incredible creations using stellated dodecahedrons, based a lot of it on the integrity of natural geometry, Bucky Fuller's geometry, and so forth.
Right.
But they're multifaceted mandalas that are suspended from the ceiling and move with the currents, with air currents, and they have an incredible healing effect. They increase psychic abilities, and they're just absolutely beautiful to look at. If anybody gets a chance, patients stop by and treat themselves. There's also a holographic exhibit that's going on now, too. It's the Museum of Science and Industry. But anyway, Richard Wood, if you haven't heard of him, is an up-and-coming sculptor artist who is the only one I know of in the country, right, Patrick?
Right, that's right. And not only that, but his exhibit, by the way, if you want to see it, is in the front door. As you walk in the front door, if you look up, you'll see it. It's hanging right inside the front door of the museum as you go in.
But geometry, you know, Pythagoras, the father of geometry, said that the characters of the book of nature could be written in the characters of geometry. So there's a whole lot to be said about geometric configuration.
By the way,
Pythagoras was biased about that, guys.
Pardon?
I said Pythagoras was biased about that.
Right.
Okay, John, does that help you?
That's very fine. Thank you so much.
Right.
Okay. You're welcome.
Appreciate you jumping in here with us. And it's your turn, Serena.
Hello.
Hi.
This is for Patrick Flanagan. A while ago, I sent you a letter asking if nurses and people in the health field could buy the Neurophone and write it off as a tax deduction.
Can you speak a little louder?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear the beginning of my sentence?
Yes, I heard the first part, yeah.
Okay. And I'm wondering if people in the health field could buy the Neurophone, like chiropractors, nurses, and write that off as a tax deduction, claiming they need it in their healing art.
Not sure.
Well,
that's
just wait. Since Dr. Sheldon Deal has published, first of all, it's not a medical device, but a number of health practitioners are using it as a balancing device for the body. And since Dr. Sheldon Deal, as I mentioned earlier, who is president of the International College of Applied Kinesiology, which consists of 8,000 members who are licensed to diagnose, wrote two articles on the Neurophone, and a number of health practitioners have purchased it. And as far as I know, they have claimed it as a business deduction. But, you know, when it comes down to that, it's between you and your tax accountant. But
and don't forget the good old man from the IRS.
So I can't say what they would say, but I can tell you that since it's been written up as an aid in that area, why, you know, more than likely you can't.
Yeah, where is the college? What?
The International College of Applied Kinesiology is a medical association made up of kinesiologists, and they meet twice a year, once in Detroit and then once in the Bahamas or something like that. But Dr. Deal is in Tucson, Arizona, at the Swan Clinic, SWAN Swan Clinic. And so if you were to write him a letter or whatever, you may be able to obtain a copy of his paper, or you may be able to apply if you're a licensed to diagnose. You may be able to apply to become a member of the college.
How do you spell his last name?
D-E-A-L.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Serena.
Okay.
Good. Best of luck with that, but you're always in trouble when you deal with a tax man, it seems like. And Ed, you're on the line.
Yes, sir. Good evening. Yeah, I had a question for Dr. Flanagan. Have you heard of a light that's supposed to be therapeutic for a number of things called the Kiva light, K-I-V-A? It's supposed to have its major impact on the structure of water. I wonder if you have heard anything about that.
No, I haven't heard anything about it at all.
Yeah, and it's manufactured by a company in New Mexico, and they have recently found some dramatic effects on taking away some of the effects of Alzheimer's and some of the effects of caused by allergies, apparently through a simulation of minerals that are activated in water and in the water structure itself. I thought you might be interested in that.
Sure, I would be interested. What city are they in?
They're in Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, okay.
And it's called a Kiva light, K-I-V-A?
Kiva, K-I-V, like in Victor A, yes.
Yeah. What is the source of the light there?
The source of the light, it's like a fluorescent bulb. And what they have done is they have altered the
spectrum.
Pardon me?
The spectrum?
Yes, the particular spectrum which it radiates is the major cause of the...
Is it full spectrum?
Major effect.
Probably ultraviolet rays.
Huh? Pardon me?
Probably ultraviolet.
No, as a matter of fact, they have cut back on the ultraviolet. It's in the visible spectrum, which that causes the major effect.
Okay. Boy, that's amazing. No, I, you know, I'm always interested in research. I have a, you know, a very large library of water anomalies, and I'm always interested in research going on anywhere about water. So I'll definitely.
If you could send the address to our secretary, we'd really appreciate it.
Shall do. I had another question. I had another question regarding your IBT shots. What are the indications that one might need a booster to that? Now, I received your shot a while ago at PV, and I've had some effects. I've just wondered if there's any key things I should look for.
How long ago did you do it?
Just this year.
This year?
Well, let's see. When was that?
You should be feeling great.
Well, I'm not. And that's one of the things I wanted to discuss.
It's been, it's been almost 2 years since we did that, so.
No, let's see. When, I don't have the exact date here as to when. It was your last one, the last one you had.
January?
But yeah, it was January, exactly.
January of
84.
When was that? Oh, well.
Anyway.
I don't have it in front of me.
Oh,
well,
I think I know who you are.
Okay, now, if. The thing is. The IBT, for those who don't know, is a health therapy which originated in Germany, and it boosts the immune system of the body. And the effects, of course, are individual based on your own biochemistry and your stress, what's going on in your life, your diet, all these things. So there's a good indication is if you felt a beneficial change. In other words, if most people, if they're in really good health, they don't know, they don't notice very much anyway, because it just makes them stronger and they're able to resist stresses in the environment and so forth, and they simply don't notice a change. But if you notice a change, in other words, if something got better and then it started to slack off, if you've been under tremendous stress, if you've you know, been in an accident or had surgery, you know, things like that, living in L.A.
Yes. Uh-huh. What if things got worse in general? Period.
In general?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
we'd have to ask you questions about your diet.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You know, why don't you write us a letter, remind us about the Kiva Light, put your phone number in there. And I'll call you up and I'll talk to you about it.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, Ed. Best of luck on that.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's our turn.
Yes. Dr. Flanagan?
Yes.
And Gail?
Yes.
I would like to know if perhaps the neurophone could help me absorb and understand and to learn, because I have a low IQ, but I can read very well. I can read a huge, long syllable of words, but I cannot comprehend.
And the kind of vitamins you take can greatly affect your comprehension. And as far as the neurophone itself goes, the neurophone, because it does enter a new channel, is used as a learning machine. We have a number of people who, for example, could not pass board exams. We have attorneys, we have doctors, people who could not get through their board exams, and yet when they recorded the notes that they wanted to learn on a tape recorder,
mm-hmm.
and then listened to it through the neurophone several times, they were able to pass their exams because it transmitted the information mm-hmm. directly into their brain. The other thing is that there's been a study done a number of years ago which showed that IQ is a function of the efficiency of the brain, mm-hmm. and that the efficiency of the brain can be improved. And basically, they were able to measure the efficiency of the brain with a device known as a neural efficiency analyzer, which measured the response of the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere of the brain to a flash of light. And they should respond simultaneously, but they don't. There's always a slight delay. One side responds first, and then the other one responds. And what they found out is that the longer the time difference between this response, the lower the IQ. And IQ tests always aren't that accurate. So you may have a problem with something that has to do with brain development when you were younger. For example, Glenn Doman of the Human Potentials Institute in Philadelphia found out that when we're children, for example, we have to do certain physical functions in order to develop our brains. And, for example, if our mothers, by some error, were to put us in a crib so that we couldn't crawl when we were at the stage where we're supposed to crawl all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, she didn't want to mess with it, so she locked you in a crib or something.
Mm-hmm.
If that happened, that area of your brain was not developed, and that tends to retard the development of other areas of the brain later on as we're growing up. And what Dr. Glenn Doman discovered is that if you go back and do these things, for example, crawl around on all fours and things like that for a period of time, it redevelops that part of the brain, and then the rest of it increases and follows. So there are a number of things people can do to increase their IQ and to increase their comprehension. The neurophone might help. But, again, the neurophone, when used in conjunction with a lot of these other things, would help. And Dr. Doman's books, by the way, are available. And if you go to the bookstore, you can order them. It's Dr. Glenn Doman, D-O-M-A-N. And also, I really think the neurophone might be of help in that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, I had a couple of shock treatments when I was 17 years old, and I'm 57 now.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like... I want to learn, but it seems like I'm kind of fenced in. I can't go beyond a certain point to understand and comprehend so I can absorb.
Right.
And I was hoping that...
Well, it's really hard to say. I know that there are people who have used the neurophone who say that it has helped them to learn.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman in Canada that was in a logging accident, and his skull was crushed, and he was in a coma for several months, and when he came out, he was like a newborn baby. And he was not progressing. He couldn't learn anything. And his mother and father started using a neurophone on him. And he progressed very, very rapidly. And today he's absolutely normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that particular case, it had helped out a lot. But it's really hard to say. There are so many factors involved.
Do you think... have any doctors been making research with multiple sclerosis and the neurophone and arthritis? And,
The neurophone is not a healing. It's not a device that is approved for medical usage. The minute you start talking about specific things like MS and all that, then the neurophone is not licensed or authorized by the FDA as a medical instrument. It's a device that may improve the efficiency of the brain balance, things like that, but it's not a medical device, so there's no research in that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you hold seminars, or could you make a recorded cassettes of seminars, or have a newsletter so that we
yes.
can subscribe
if you,
to it?
If you write or call, if you write the address
yes.
or call, we will send you some information. And Gail and I used to give seminars, but we found out we could be much more effective working in our laboratory in Sedona and sending out audio cassette tapes. We're also going to, in the future, make video cassette tapes available of seminars.
Oh, wonderful. But you also say you're in Sedona, and then you have this Novato address.
Right. Well, our office is in Novato. Our laboratory is in Sedona. And our office is a point of communication. If you want to find out any information or communicate with us, you have to go through our office.
And then it'd be nice if you have a question and answer column so I could ask you about the water crystals, which I missed out on last weekend. And
we have, Gail and I put out newsletter, a audio newsletter, which consists of cassette tapes in which we talk about various things. And on our audio newsletter tapes, we talk about water, we talk about distilled water, water distillers, we talk about the neurophone, a new air purifier we developed known as the electron field generator.
Our travels, our research.
Our travels around the world, our research, all of that is on these tapes. And so a number of people have subscribed to the audio newsletter, and each tape. Right now there are three tapes out. We're planning on putting out two more tapes in the very near future, and the subscription is for six tapes, and they're put out on an irregular basis because we don't put out a tape until we have something that we feel is important to say, and now we've accumulated enough that a new tape is going to come out very soon. So that's one way to obtain information about all this is to, you know, contact our office and ask for information on what is available.
We have an hour-long tape just on the water that answers all your questions.
Oh, thank you very, very much. I know I'm going to feel much better and my sinuses will improve, too. Because we have a biological clock in our bodies. I know that because...
I don't know why.
I wake up at between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, and I'll cough, and I have phlegm, cough, and phlegm, and I do it every once in a while.
Well.
And I think if I had some of those old water with those water crystals, it might improve my health.
There's no way of knowing.
Well, good luck to you.
Good luck.
Also, I wanted to say that I can't have anything lactic, and I think that water might improve my health so that I could drink milk and have cheese without
any effect. Well, milk is very bad for you anyway.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much.
Okay.
All right, Stella,
okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. I'm Bill Jenkins.
For Dr. Flanagan, I'll try to be brief. how can I tell if a crystal is a quartz crystal?
Well,
now, I bought one at Sears, and it was a cut. They had a beautiful display.
Most of those crystals are lead glass crystals, and they are not actual crystals. They are what are known as amorphous substances, and most of the cut crystals, you know, like you buy, they're like multifaceted, are usually lead glass, and when you buy one, you have to ask. Quartz crystals are extremely expensive when they're cut and faceted, so... you know, if it was like $10 or $12, then you didn't buy a quartz crystal. If it was multifaceted, a quartz crystal would cost you, you know, maybe several hundred dollars.
But then again, if you went to a place like Grieger's and you bought a rock crystal in its own natural shape, you could get it for anywhere from $5 to $15. That's an estimate, but approximately.
I see. Yes, I was going to ask, where would I get one?
It's much more powerful.
I think I know one place where I can get them. They're not cut.
Yeah,
better that way.
Grieger's in Pasadena also has them.
Yeah, well, that's not convenient for me.
Right.
Now, how about the pyramids? I haven't heard much about pyramids lately. Two or three years ago, you know, it was quite a fad.
Right. In fact, it was quite a fad about 12 years ago when I first wrote Pyramid Power and it became a bestseller. It's
thousands of years ago in Egypt.
Thousands of years ago, of course. It was a
very
big deal
in Egypt, right.
Yes.
Still is.
Where can I get a pyramid? Just look around.
From our company, if you want one of the little mini Giza pyramids that's composed of a crystal that's charged in the Queen's Chamber and a piece of the Great Pyramid and the other stone combination, you can write to that address. They're called the mini Giza pyramids, and they're very powerful. Small pyramids.
Now, let's see. I didn't get your box number at Nevada, California, or the zip code.
Okay, well, number one.
94948.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Give it to me again.
If any of you miss our address or phone number, you can call the station.
Okay. Give it to me now. Box number what?
Okay, and ask. But it's for now, we'll give it to you again. It's P.O. Box 686.
Nevada, California. What's the zip?
94948.
The phone number is 415-892-7594.
Could you repeat that?
415-892-7594.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And then I can write for the audio newsletter.
Okay, great.
Right, you can get everything there, Ruth.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruth. And we have... Sina, is that Sina on the line?
Sonia.
Sonia.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I'd like to give Mr. Flanagan some information on the Kiva light.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's Kiva, K-I-V-A,
mm-hmm.
I-N-C, income, something like that. It's 912 Broadway, N-E, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87102.
Okay.
All right.
And his phone number is 505-242-5200.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. I gave some information also. It's an improved version of the Vitalite. Have you heard of the Vita light?
Oh, the Vita light, sure.
Right.
Oh, we know about that.
The full spectrum light?
That's John Ott's work.
Huh?
That's
your
Dr. John Ott's work.
It's an improved version.
Oh, I see.
Okay. It's an improved version that it's a, it makes your water clear. It that's how many things he says.
Well, I'd love to test it out, you know, in my laboratory with all my instruments, so it'd be great.
Okay, so when you get some information, how could I find out what you found out?
Just write it at that address.
Okay, because I haven't sent for it because I am not, you know, I don't believe in it, really.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll check it out, and I'll see if there are any measurable changes in the water from it, and
see an audio news.
And it'll be in one of our audio newsletters or on this show sometime when we're on again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Serena, does that help you?
Not Serena, it's Sonia.
Sonia.
Okay, Sonia.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
Listen, if you just want to know something, you just ask the audience here. They've all got the answer.
That's right.
And let's see what Dix has on his mind. Hi, Dix.
Hi. Look, I've been trying to research for the Dean Drive. Have you ever heard of it? It was a contraption that was invented after World War II by a civil service guy when the government was asking for anything that would move or anything it would do. And he had a thing that I saw the demonstration of, which was a contraption of levers that was powered by just a drill press. And he had set this contraption on a scale in one way, and it would get heavier. Set it the other way, and get lighter, and then it moved left and right.
Yeah,
according to the
Dean Drive
power that was put into the circular motion.
Right.
And they said it was impossible because the mathematics was all wrong.
That's called an inertial drive. It was invented, there are a number of them that were invented, but one of the most famous ones was invented by Dean. Dr. Dean?
Dean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We tested that years ago. Dean was in our laboratory.
Yeah. I heard that there was a test.
We ran tests on it, and indeed it does work. But the only problem with it is that it creates what's called a unidirectional vibration or a vector force.
Yeah.
In one direction, but it does this by means of vibration, and unfortunately, the mechanical equipment required to make it do any work that was worthwhile, when it reached a certain frequency, it vibrated so much that it would fly apart.
Yeah, it didn't develop anything at all in the way of a powerful thing. But it worked.
Oh, definitely,
yeah.
And it shows that Newton's laws need to be modified.
Well, we have found that there are a lot of the so-called laws of physics that are outmoded and are just not accurate anymore.
Yeah, the mathematics was all wrong, but I don't see where the mathematics would make it work as much as it did. But nevertheless...
Well, it's really a very simple device, and it just shows you that, in other words, Newton's law, you know, it says that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. But there should be one little bit added to it. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, but not at the same time.
Well, Dean was just a civil servant, and he wasn't a scientist at all or a physicist. But all he wanted to do was help the lever thing to be able to help the leverage situation.
No, it's a great principle, and there have been probably about five or six other patents that have come out on it since he developed his.
Well, okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
The Dean Drive. I had never heard about that in years, Patrick.
Right.
And, but it never was able to do much work because of those restrictions that were placed upon itself.
Right.
We have John on the line. Hello, John.
Hi, Bill, Patrick, and Gal.
Hi.
How are you all this evening?
We're just fine.
Good. This is only the second time I've listened to this show, but I'm finding it very stimulating. And it's nice to find these types of shows on the radio.
Could I pause for a little extra stimulation here, John?
Certainly.
Okay, we'll be right.
Thanks of the flotation tanks.
Oh, I think it's great. You're talking about the idea that first originated with John Lilly, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's great. I've only floated once, and that is, you know, in a tank designed for it. We have a hot tub, and I float a lot in that. I just lay on my back and float and meditate. But I think the flotation tank is really good. It's one of the best devices that I think anyone's ever developed. I'd love to have one where I could float every day, but it's it's definitely a way to gaining altered states in a natural way, and it's extremely pleasurable. It balances your body.
As long as they don't play rock music when you're in there.
No.
Yeah.
Play the ohm tape.
Yeah. I happen to have my own flotation tank.
Right.
And I have to agree with you. It is a tremendous way to achieve those profound states of relaxation. And it's almost like we're cheating because it's so very simple.
Right.
How would you like to have the ohm tape played in there like that?
I think that'd be great.
Oh, boy.
That'd drive you crazy. I
think that'd be great.
You'll
get
right out of your body.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. You know, since that's been available for the last couple of years, people have said they've had instantaneous experiences, out-of-body experiences, reincarnation, flashbacks, and a wide variety of things.
Are you talking about the tank, Gal?
No, I'm talking about the ohm tape.
The ohm tape.
I'd love to try it in a...
Well, you know, speaking of the out-of-body thing, Bob Monroe was with us last week, and they use the flotation tanks at the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences in bringing on the altered state of consciousness for a number of their explorers who then move out of body and do the marvelous explorations that they're doing.
Well, I'd like to learn or develop the ability to astral project or out-of-body experience.
So would I.
But, yeah, I intend to, actually. It's one of the many things that is on my list.
Well, I understand I got a traffic ticket on the astral level, so I'm grounded for a while.
But I would also like to ask Patrick, why does he feel that the tank isn't very popular?
It's not very popular?
Yeah.
Well, it's like all new things, like the Neurophone. I developed it 27 years ago, and it's only now getting popular. And unfortunately, when you have things like that, it takes a long time to educate the public.
I think one of the things may be the initial price of it, too.
Right, including the price.
Yeah, I think you're right. But actually, if you weighed the price against a flotation tank against the money that is spent on medicines and prescriptions every year.
Hey, listen, there's our music. John, we're going to take a break and be right back.
The Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and they were sounding the sound of home. Listen to this. It may do something to you. Slide it back down there in the background. That's an amazing recording. You know, I think what we're going to do for you, Patrick, is that our good friend John Bedini has now developed a way using the beloved crystal to take a sine wave, like you would find on any piece of tape that that's on.
Right.
Convert that into digital, much
right.
as your Neurophone works, and
sure.
record that back onto tape in digital form.
Right.
And let the digital sound fly right through the speakers. And
Absolutely.
Through the speakers, you're now listening with your skin. And he has also just got his patent on a new little device that will take the monaural sound, digitally scramble it up, and it'll come out in stereo. So we just may make that stereo and send it to you.
Great.
All right. Let's go on with those who are in line. Boris, welcome aboard.
Hello again. I'm just holding my crystal here in my hand and seeing if ohm would light up.
Did it do anything?
The light isn't dazzling me right now. My question is about the Neurophone. Does it bypass the cochlea in any way, or do you still have to go through the cochlea?
Well, if you have one functioning naturally, it's hard to bypass it, but... there was once a test run on one of the earlier models of the Neurophone, and we didn't do this, but someone else did it. We didn't do it because I don't believe in animal testing, but at one time a test was run for a government institution in which they trained some dogs in their laboratory to respond to the Neurophone type device, and then they removed entirely the inner ear on the dog so that they were nerve deaf. And then when they played the sound, the dog responded exactly in the same way, showing that the dog was hearing the sound through an alternate channel into the brain. And the Neurophone, if you have a cochlea, it will stimulate your own hearing system as well as your skin hearing system. But most of the stimulation, let's say 99.9% of it, is through the skin and has nothing to do with the hearing, with the normal ears. An example, Harry Stein, who is a science writer, is a very well-known science writer, ran a test when he went to the dentist. He had a root canal, and the dentist numbed his jaw. And so when he got home, he had, you know, a good portion of his face was numb, you know, the trigeminal nerve. And so he placed the Neurophone on his face, turned it on, and he couldn't hear any of it. It was absolutely dead. And then as the Novocaine started to wear off, he began to hear the sound. So this shows that the Neurophone transmits information to the brain through, again, another channel.
Well, that certainly seems to be bypassing the cochlea, but what bothers me is the cochlea is changing the information into something unrelated, sort of like assembly language in a computer or something
well,
like that.
Well, that's why, see, the Neurophone translates the information into a special digital code. In other words, that's why when I got my patent on the Neurophone, in other words, you can't feed just ordinary sound into your skin. It won't work. So what you have to do is digitize the sound in a certain way and then feed it into your skin. And so the Neurophone is like an electronic cochlea. In other words, it performs, it encodes the signal before it goes into the skin.
Well, that seems to be the question I was asking. In other words, it's synthesizing the cochlea.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
And would that be able to bypass any kind of nerve deafness, or would it bypass a damage to the cochlea?
We have a number of people who are nerve deaf. In other words, who have had, say, the nerves of the inner ear destroyed by meningitis or whatever, who
yes.
can hear with the Neurophone. But not all deaf people can hear with the Neurophone. And we don't know why, but it may be due to atrophy of the brain, in other words, an area where the Neurophone stimulates sound or whatever. But there have been a number of people who were totally nerve deaf who could not be helped by bone conduction or by any other hearing device who could hear with the Neurophone.
Well, that's certainly very encouraging. Well, that's what I wanted to know, and that answers my question. And I just want to add one little more bit here. I'm holding a crystal here. Since you people got me into crystals, I'm in electronics, and I just went down and got crystals from the store, from the rock shop, and put them in electronic apparatus, and I noticed they tune up right away. They don't have to have anything done to them, and they will typically tune at three different frequencies. And this one here rings at 331 kilohertz, 512, and 560.
Right.
And I just wondered, is that the different hexagonal faces maybe that are ringing or what?
Well, a lot of the crystals, of course, crystals will vibrate at different frequencies depending on their dimensions. But there's also the fact that the crystal itself is a highly structured, in other words, what we're talking about is a lattice of electrical charges on the surface of the crystal. And, for example, when you put the crystal in water, rather than the vibration of the crystal, we're talking about this lattice of electrical charges affecting the water by hydrogen bonding. On the other hand, if the crystals also emit phonon signals, in other words, phonon packets or waveforms that have nothing to do with the actual vibratory resonance of the crystal. We're talking about much, much higher frequencies. So there are a lot of things going on in a crystal, and by cutting a crystal so that it vibrates at harmonics of according to the golden ratio, you get a much, much more powerful output. So it's pretty complex.
Yes, I guess so. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Boris, I hope that helps you a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night.
I'm Bill Jenkins. Tonight, you're listening to Open Mic, and Gail Flanagan, and guys, you just don't get by with anything with this audience. Murray wants to know why milk is bad. Is that right, Murray?
Yes, that's correct. Doctor, near the end of the last hour, you mentioned in passing that milk was very bad for you. And for some reason, you sounded like the kind of guy I'd like to hear go into more detail about that. So if you don't mind, would you please?
Sure. Well, especially cow's milk. But, you know, all babies need milk when they're growing because they need the calcium and the minerals and things like that, especially when the milk comes from the same species that you belong to. For example, babies, you know, when consuming mother's milk, God or the divine architect of the universe created the proper amino acid balance and mineral balance and so forth so that we would grow, you know, strong, proper bodies. And cow's milk, for example, was designed for cows, and cows have a much larger bone structure and a whole different
rate of growth
than we do, so they require a different balance of milk. And humans are the only, especially Caucasians, that is in the Western world, we're the only ones that consume milk after we reach the state of weaning. Because the way nature designed this, and the way God designed this, was that when we reach a certain stage, we're supposed to be weaned off of milk and never use milk again. Many people, as a result, most people have a milk allergy that they aren't even aware of.
What are some of the signs of the milk allergy? And I know this isn't a health show exactly, but if you don't mind.
Right. Well, basically, Gail and I, for example, Gail and I have been pure vegetarians for a number of years. Gail's been a pure vegetarian now for about 17 years, and she hasn't had any animal products at all for 17 years. And the end result of that is that she's never had a cold for 17 years. And if you get a cold, most people who get colds consume dairy products in one form or the other, whether it's milk or cheese or whatever. And what happens is you keep putting this junk in, this food into your body that is not compatible with the body, and sometime or other your body just starts to object to this, and it manifests in different forms, in the form of a cold or the flu or something like that. And Gail and I have never had a cold or any symptoms of a cold since I stopped drinking milk. And the best way to test that is to lay off or stop taking all milk or dairy products for 30 days, and then if you just drink one sip of milk, your nose will feel like somebody plugged it up with cheese. In other words, you'll instantly get stuffed up, showing the tremendous production of white blood cells in defense of this foreign substance, which is milk, that is going into the body. And, you know, we're subject to a lot of advertising and bombardment by the milk industry telling us that we should eat cheese and drink milk and ice cream and all these things. And they're really very bad for you.
I've not been able to drink milk since I was a very, very young boy.
You're lucky.
Because I would immediately plug up. And
right.
That's exactly
hard to breathe.
Yeah, I was sitting here drinking a big glass of milk, and so your comment really struck a nerve with me. Well, okay, well, then all I have to say is thanks a lot for your show, Bill. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Murray.
And $8 to everybody.
There you go.
All right. Bye now.
You're on the right channel there. And Kay, what's on your mind?
Yep. The other thing about milk, Bill, just very quickly, is that it's, really, what is it? It's the mucus of lactating mammals.
Okay. You certainly did a great deal for the ice cream industry. All right, Kay, lactating mucus is what it is. What's on your mind?
I'm here.
Yes.
I want to know what their opinion is of what happens between the mental and physical bodies of people who are considered channels, and what happens when they do receive.
When they do what?
When they do receive.
A channel. When a channel is receiving information from sources other than his own consciousness.
Or a higher form of his own consciousness.
Perhaps.
Well, what? Because I know that there are certain unusual manifestations that happen with people that do this. Not necessarily visible, but in their health. And I'm kind of curious if you have looked into that at all.
What kind of health manifestations, Carrie, are you talking about?
Well, I'm not sure. She's not talking about the neurophone, obviously. She's talking about receiving...
No, she's talking about a channel.
Yeah. Well, most people eat very poor diets, and as a result are in a state of imbalance to begin with. And people who are very sensitive to external influences, in other words, people who are sensitive, say, to other information or channeling or whatever, other dimensions, can, because of that sensitivity and because most of them don't eat properly, in other words, that multiplies because of their increased sensitivity and they're more sensitive to the negative things that they're consuming in their environment as well as because of this increased sensitivity.
Okay.
There are ways of balancing yourself. In fact, for years we taught seminars in which we taught people how to balance themselves in various ways. The neurophone, for example, balances the body. When you listen to pink noise or a sound that's sort of like a waterfall, even the ohm tape has a very powerful balancing effect.
Well, I was just in a group this afternoon who just about did what you were playing over the air tonight.
Right.
And it was very interesting because it was a bunch of young people, a large group of young people,
right,
who were rockers.
Uh-huh.
And they had never really had that experience before. And everyone could feel the action in the center and the interior of the body.
Absolutely.
And it was terrific. And it's not only terrific for the person that hears, but the person that partakes,
right,
in that experience.
In that case, for example, when you do the ohm, especially if you do enter that channel or that resonance that you're talking about that you can only experience and it's hard to understand unless you've experienced it. And the ohm tape has that in it, the ohm tape from the King's Chamber. But when you do enter that state, when you allow that vibration to enter your body, it does have a powerful effect on balancing acupuncture meridians. And that's why every single mantra or every single chant that is in the Sanskrit language begins with the word ohm, because ohm is such a balancing sound.
Well, do you also agree then that perhaps those particular sounds and calls maybe call letters and call tones to the ships?
Sure.
Okay.
Well,
could be.
Could be.
Work with our ships anyway.
Are you privileged to any of the channels who are channeling information from the ships
well,
at this time?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, when we talk about, you know, Patrick Flanagan you know, as an inventor, I mean, speaking for myself, when we talk about me as a child prodigy inventor and all that, all the inventions that came out of me when I was a child from the age of 8 forward were channeled. And,
right.
You know, I admit that freely, and there are a lot of people who have been inventors who don't admit it, that is publicly, but privately they'll tell you that they receive their ideas from, they believe, from from another higher source, whether that's ships or whatever. And
right.
Every single major invention, including my neurophone, was channeled.
Well, that's good company, because Tesla said the same thing.
Exactly.
Einstein said the same thing.
Are you aware of some of the people that are channeling high energies from the Christed ships?
Oh,
and
yes. Well,
yes.
We are all.
I know you are. I'd just
right.
like somebody to say it.
Right.
And sometimes it concerns me when people talk about out-of-body and astral projection without talking about protection and how to care for yourself when you do these things.
Right.
And I sometimes think that perhaps you should talk about that as well.
Right.
Because just floating out of the body is not the ideal state. And so what is more ideal is rather than
right.
to go within to the God within. And that's where our source is.
Right.
And to stay connected with all of our bodies and all of our forms.
Right. We all have guides or angels who
right.
are assigned to protect us. And basically what we do is ask, and they can't exert their full power of protection unless you ask them.
The law of the universe.
So you
okay,
simply ask
the only
for that
thing
protection.
I'm saying, I don't mean to interrupt, please excuse
right.
me, but the only thing is that I hear a lot about the curiosity, which is wonderful, and the need for you know, this new wave of love and intelligence that's coming our way. But at the same time, a lot of people play with it, and
right.
it's very, very dangerous. if we don't have some guides on this earth that are teaching the same things that you're teaching about your neuroform or whatever, forgive me, the name of your invention is, that we must teach also how is the proper way to gain entrance to the inner circle, rather than to float out there somewhere and get onto the astral plane, which is not a lighted plane. You know, to get to the higher forms and the higher levels, one has to go through the astral plane and to the higher level of truth. And so what concerns me is that I have found that there are people that are beautiful human beings and spirits that are not getting past that and are in danger and in trouble because they're floating out there out of body somewhere without instruction. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Some of us can't float out there out of body.
I know. And sometimes it's better that you don't.
A traffic ticket. I'll never live there.
You know, sometimes that's for your own good.
I suppose so.
What happens, you can really ask any channel of truth, and they'll tell you that they know many people that are beautiful spirits that are in the mental hospitals because they did not know any better.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I had to say it.
No, we discussed that very same thing. I believe we discussed it last week or the week before.
Okay.
What you were just talking about there, Kate.
Oh, great. Glad to hear it.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for dropping in with us. Beautiful to have you along. And Florence, you're there.
Hi. This is very interesting, and I definitely agree with Kate. I've been working in the field since early 50s, and my first teacher was an accomplished metaphysician, which released me, and I'm going to ask you about something else later, but I have to tell you about when the man mentioned a flotation tank, or when I go, whether you want to call it into the higher dimension or the other side or whatever.
You go out of body too?
Yeah. I am encouraged to come oftener than I do because, there's things that this planet needs.
Mm-hmm.
But before I get, I'm allowed to go into the higher, up to the, at the seventh level, there's this tank or pool, whichever you want to call it.
You've been to the seventh level?
Sure. This water, I was taken into it slowly at first because it's a little, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
I can lay down in it and still get all the oxygen I need.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think you need any.
Well, it seems like, you know, I'm talking about spiritual things in physical terms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then there's a waterfall, and it's like liquid light, if you can imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
So then I go up the middle of the waterfall, and then there's a tree, which is like crystallized light. And
how often do you take these trips, Florence?
Well, my guide tells me I should do this at least once a week or preferably once a day, quickly, you know.
Could you send your guide over to see me?
Bill, I almost went down to Van Nuys. A friend of yours told me that you were going to be in the Van Nuys court,
mm-hmm,
the house yesterday. I hope everything came out all right.
Well, it's going to be December 4th. It was continued again.
Oh. Well, maybe I'll come down there, and my name is Florence, and we could get together.
Okay.
Anyway, I wanted to ask Dr. Flanagan and Gail about several years ago I got a pyramid, which is a free-floating mobile about 3 feet square and 3.5 feet tall, and it's made out of tubular aluminum. I hung it above my bed, and this becomes my favorite room. because, well, there's a large pyramid on top, and then the bottom is constructed of nine smaller pyramids pointing down to the earth, and the top pyramid is pointing up toward the sky. And I was told when I bought it that it unites the two energies from the earth and the upper reaches. You familiar with that?
Oh, sure, sure. There are a number of energies. There are earth energies, and there are more etheric energies. And architects, the Chinese geomancers, I'm familiar with both kinds of energies. And yes, you can utilize both, and you can, with resonant structures like the pyramid, utilize both energies.
Does that help you, Florence?
Yeah, I just, it's amazing how, well, I can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, no, it's true. There's, you know, when we first wrote the book Pyramid Power in 1972, it was, the reason you don't hear that much about pyramids anymore is that pyramids are now accepted a lot more than they were. And, you know, when something is pretty well accepted, it's sort of like normal, and then you don't hear much about it because it's not as controversial as it once was. And
yeah, when something's new, everyone talks about it.
Right.
Do you have the Ohm tape?
Yes, it's available through our office.
You mean this tape here?
Yeah.
Yeah, that has a lot of power. I go to a group that uses the Ohm.
Right.
Okay, Florence, thank you very much for sharing all of that.
Okay, on December 4th, is this going to be at 1:30 again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll come down there and introduce myself.
All right, be good to see you. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's open. Cliff. Hi, Cliff.
Hi, Dr. Flanagan?
Yes.
So, I'd like to ask you, you had mentioned something about a half an hour ago about Newton's third law.
About what?
Newton's third law.
Newton's law?
Newton's third law.
Third law, right.
You mentioned something about time. Could you expand on that?
Well, this was regarding the inertial drive, or the Dean drive that we mentioned earlier. And for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, but it should actually be modified to say not at the same time, because the Dean drive makes use of the natural time delay that's in the physical universe to create a unidirectional vector force. And it does this. In other words, theoretically, if you have, for example, in the Dean drive, you have two weights rotating in opposite directions. And theoretically, the imbalances in the system should cancel out exactly, and it should sit in one place and just vibrate. But what he does is he creates a slight time phase differential in which this imbalance is manifested in one direction. And so it becomes unidirectional. I mean, we had Dean drives rolling all over the, like a little red wagon with one in it, and it would roll all over the laboratory and so forth, and it wasn't throwing anything out, and it wasn't driving a wheel or anything. You can put it on a scale and turn it up, and we had a device that weighed 25 pounds that went down to, say, 2 or 3 pounds. And you could pick it up. You could pick it up with your little finger and hold it as long as it was turned on. Turn it off and you got 25 pounds on your little finger. So basically, this shows that there's a time lag or time delay that can be utilized to create inertial drive or inertial force. And this would work fine in outer space when you don't really need to generate that much force. But in no one has really been able to generate enough force to make it worthwhile to build such devices on the Earth's surface.
Have you developed any mathematics along that besides experimental?
Tons of math on it, yes. This work that I'm talking about was done 24 years ago. In other words, most of the math was worked out by William O. Davis, who was formerly head of the Air Force Research and Development, and who was at that time director of high research laboratories in Stamford, Connecticut. Bill Davis is dead now, but the a lot of that data was published in Analog Science, Fact, and Fiction magazine in the facts section years and years ago when John W. Campbell was editor.
Does that help you, Cliff?
Where can I get it?
You're going to have to go to the library and just do some research on it. Unfortunately, you're going to have to look up in the books and, you know, in the books in print to see if there's anything, and then go back into the magazines and start looking for Dean Drive. If they have analogs, start looking in the indexes and go back about 24 years, and you'll find a lot of data on the Dean Drive back then.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Cliff.
Thanks.
And good hunting on that one. Elena.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you. I'm so interested. You're so very interested.
Thank you.
I tune in late. And when I tuned in, there was a gentleman talking about IV, and this is what it sounded to me, IVT? Shot?
IBT.
Oh, IBT. Uh-huh. And I am interested, where can I get, do I write in to your Nevada office to get information about that?
We have an audio tape, a cassette tape on it. I can hardly hear you, I'm sorry. It's about our research and our travels around the world to find the ideal, you might say, rejuvenation or revitalization technique to reverse the aging process of the human system. Basically, when we're talking about reversing the aging process, we're really just talking about reversing the effects of stress, because it's really stress that ages and accelerates the aging process. And there are various ways of reversing it, and the IBT is one way to do it at a cellular level. And then there are, of course, you know, exercise, diet, things like that. But a lot of that data is on our tape. So if you write our office and ask for it, we'll send you a price list. Also, please, when you do, if you do write us, please send a self-addressed and stamped envelope with your letter.
Fine. Oh, well, thank you very much.
Okay, Elena.
Yeah.
I hope that's helpful to you.
Very much. Thank you.
And Romaine, you're on.
Hello, Bill. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
And I have a question for Pat and Gail.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a natural quartz crystal that I think might possibly be a coded one. And I was wanting to know, is there anyone that they know that can decode them? Or what I could do to find out something about it?
What do you mean, a coded crystal?
Well, I had read that there might possibly be coded crystals. And this crystal that I have, on the face of it, it has three little triangles over on the lower right-hand side, and it has lines going across the top. And when I look closer, it does have triangles on across the face, more of them. But they are smaller, but the only one is raised, and it's almost like, say, someone would sign a painting or something on the right-hand side.
Those are called phantom crystals.
Yeah. The way that you get information out of a crystal is that you have to... the only way to do it is to meditate on it, and Gail and I are working on a way of trying to get information out of a crystal by using the neurophone.
Uh-huh.
In other words, by plugging a crystal into the neurophone and then transmitting that information directly into the brain. That may be possible.
Uh-huh. Is there any place I could get in touch with you to possibly have you check it out? Or?
Well, that's hard to do. The only thing right now, because... we are in a very isolated laboratory, and the only way to really, unfortunately, do that is if we're happen to be giving a lecture or something. But if you write a letter, we talk about crystals a lot in our newsletters. And so if you drop us a line or whatever with the self-addressed and stamped envelope, we'll send you a little sheet on what information is available. It's very difficult for us to give private consultations.
Mm-hmm. I see. Now, my feelings on it are that it might have something to do with the pyramids in Giza, because they are in kind of the same line as the three big ones, you know, Cheops and the other two.
Where did you get the crystal?
I had got it from a man that sells rocks, and it is a Brazilian crystal, I believe.
Right.
And I had got it at the Orange County swap meet.
Oh, that's great. Those phantom crystals, as Gail mentioned, we have a number of crystals that have, you know, pyramid-type phantoms in them. And,
now, this isn't inside. It's on the face.
It's
kind of raised.
Okay.
The largest one is.
Well, it sounds like a great crystal. The best advice that we can give you is to... put yourself in a relaxed state, place that crystal on your solar plexus or on your third eye in your forehead, and lying down, and maybe listen to the Om tape, and go into a very deep, relaxed state, and just ask for guidance, ask for information, and just keep doing that and see what comes, because if there's any information there that you're supposed to have, you'll get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I would put it under my pillow, actually, and then I would make note of the type of dreams I have.
Uh-huh.
And you understand also that the information will come to you when it's supposed to. I've got some fantastic crystals that are one of a kind that represent the distilled essence of probably 500 tons of the regular quartz. And I know that within them is some very valuable information because that's how the ancients stored the information. Crystals are sort of organic computers. And if you wanted a way to store information for billions of years, you would use the crystal. So when the information is to be brought out, it will be. And if it is a powerful and a very important crystal, and it is in your possession, then apparently you're the one that should know about it. So I would put it under my pillow and see what type of dreams I have, and make note of them. But understand that when the time is right, the information will be there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Romaine, does that help you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Push the river.
Pardon?
In other words, don't push the river.
I see. Okay, the little lines that might be going across the top, would it be any help to magnify them to see if they like microwaves?
Those are growth lines.
Uh-huh.
And the little horizontal lines are growth lines. Realize that a crystal that's an inch long took about 50,000 years for it to grow. And in 50,000 years of growth, there are variations, in the environment in which the crystal was growing, which create those little lines and things. So,
the little triangles on them now, could they be some kind of growth from that? Or?
Oh, sure. They could be some kind of growth. That's very possible.
The phantoms are a mystical type of inclusion.
No, this is on the surface, though, she's talking about.
Well, I know, but the type of crystal that you have helps you to sort out and sift the harvest of your experience. When it's in your proximity, worn, and especially if consciously focused upon, and projected and meditated with, and you can call it a clearinghouse, but as you look at it and you spend time with it, I mean a lot of time, put it in the sunlight, soak it, purify it, and spend time with it, and the more you look into it, the more you'll get out of it.
Oh, okay.
There's no hard and fast rules with crystals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my favorite sayings is that the only rule about crystals is there are no rules. You know, there are a lot of people that set up all these regulations and so forth. Yes, there are a lot of facts that are true about crystals, but just being with it in a way that you find comfortable. Some people put under their pillow. Some people will take it into meditation. I do all of the above. I have crystals with me all the time.
I mean, she's our crystal bag lady.
Yeah. My middle name is Crystal.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Gail carries about, literally, she wasn't joking, she carries on her off day, on her light day, she carries 30 pounds of crystals in her purse.
I believe in creating my own environment. And when I have my crystals with me, then everywhere is home.
So that's the way that goes. Okay, Romaine, thank you very, very much.
Yes, thank you. Goodbye.
I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me, and hello, Edson.
Oh, hi. How are you, Mr. Jenkins?
Fine.
And Dr. Flanagan and Mrs. Flanagan. First, I'd like to ask, I got in late, so I didn't get the address of your laboratory. Could you give that again?
Okay. Our laboratory is in Sedona, Arizona, but our office where we communicate with the world, you might say, is in Novato, California. And that's at P.O. Box 686. Novato, N-O-V-A-T-O, California. And the zip is 94948. And if you drop us a line and want to know information, please include a self-addressed and stamped envelope.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, have you heard of the use of tourmaline?
Oh, yes.
It's both pyroelectric and piezoelectric, and I haven't heard too much about that in crystal research. It seems mostly quartz crystals. And also, could you mention about the biomagnetic effects. I do research for the Albert Roy Davis Laboratory in Green Cove Springs, Florida. And let's see, have you ever heard of the Phyton device in the Soviet Union that uses phytosides from plants?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Could you comment on those things?
Well, you want to hear about the tourmaline?
Yeah.
First? Okay. Well, the electroatomic currents that are magnetized in the rhythms of all tourmaline crystals are directly linked to the areas in our consciousness that automatically balance our hormone levels and secretion. Patrick just purchased a tourmaline ring for me for our anniversary present. By the way, it's really wonderful sharing our anniversary with a million people.
Happy anniversary.
Today. And
Emily's birthday.
Yeah, and happy birthday, Emily. Anyway, the keynote of the tourmaline is regulation. It sort of guards the temple of our endocrine system, so to speak. It's one of the most powerful stones for polarizing the body that we could use.
Mm.
And I highly recommend them, and it's also very soothing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, balancing. What was the other question?
About biomagnetics, and there's some research that the North Pole seems to affect IQ.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know about the North Pole affecting the IQ, but Albert Roy Davis did point out the fact. He was the first person I know of who actually, in a scientific way, pointed out the fact that there is a difference between the North Pole and South Pole of magnet as far as the energy. Although Carl von Reichenbach, who wrote the books on Odic Force, using people who had clairvoyant or psychic vision, said that there was a difference in the color emanation from a magnet, the North Pole emitting a blue color and the South Pole emitting a red color. And Roy Davis discovered a very simple thing, that there is definitely a difference on physical materials, crystal growth, on the hardness of various thermal setting and room temperature setting materials such as concrete, things like that, with north-south pole treatment. So there's a huge volume of information on north and south pole magnetic effects, but no one really quite understands what is really going on, except that there is a great difference in it. We've done a lot of research on it, but that would take a whole, we could talk for, a whole hour just on that, so that's just sort of a summary of it.
Well, Edson always comes in with a multiple warhead question here.
That's true. I wonder about this device they're using in the Soviet Union that uses air phytocides to stimulate workers and also kill germs. Have you heard about that?
Well, just a little bit about it. There's not that, in other words, naturally. I don't know that much about it, except that, again, going back, Dr. Phil Callahan in at the University of Gainesville in Florida has, using a device known as a Fourier Transform Infrared Spectrometer, has discovered that plants emit molecules that, when stimulated by ordinary environmental radiation sources, that is, infrared sources in the environment, plus acoustic vibrations, things like that, emit laser lines. In other words, these molecules actually emit laser energy at certain wavelengths in the infrared spectrum, and insects use these wavelengths to communicate. And what we found is that essences of plants, and also essences from any living organism, radiate energies at different wavelengths. And Phil Callahan believes that it is these certain wavelengths that are the control energies for the living system. And so if you want to control bacteria, or you want to control or heighten certain effects, why, you simply put a few of these organic molecules in the air and hit it with the right environmental radiation, and they emit these energies that have powerful, powerful effects on the bio system. And it's really an interesting area, an area that I've done research with Phil Callahan on, and it's absolutely wide open. He has the first infrared spectrometer, as far as we know, that was ever developed, and it's a brand new area of investigation, and right now we don't know very much about it, except that we are actually measuring these precise wavelengths and discovering that when the body is irradiated with certain wavelengths, it creates certain feelings. For example, going back to the Om sound earlier, when you chant the word Om, it causes this it causes these laser emissions from the human breath. The molecules of our breath actually generate these laser lines that, when you get that right resonance that we were talking about earlier, the breath actually lights up brilliantly in the infrared spectrum. And at that point, people who are in the environment suddenly transcend to new levels of consciousness.
I have a new level of consciousness we're going to have to transcend to, guys.
Right.
Okay. The year is... So, you guys continue.
If
you're done, I think, did Patrick answer your question?
Yeah, he certainly did. And Mr. Jenkins, I got a tape of the Radio Moscow tribute to Tesla. I finally got it for you, and I'll be sending it on to you.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Maybe we have time to get to Leonard's question. Hello, Leonard.
Hi, good evening. May I suggest a couple of corrections? A lady, a couple of calls back, several calls back, seemed to be put out about how many people were in mental institutions. I would suggest to her that there are a lot more out of them than there are in. If it was the other way around, it would be a highly unbalanced world. Doctor?
Yeah, he's there.
Have you ever heard of the experiment where different sounds were played to plants?
Oh, yes.
And in which a concert music like Bach and Beethoven was played in modern jazz, but the plants and growths responded best to the sound of a Ferrari engine?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, that's being used in agriculture. Acres USA, an agricultural magazine, deals in things like this. There are actually commercial devices on the market right now that radiate orchards with the sounds of chirping birds and things like that, because they found out that chirping birds make plants grow better than anything.
Will you allow me to say something very important for Sir Isaac Newton? He is recognized as the greatest cognitive genius that has ever lived in the history of the world. His law or principle that for every action there is an equal reaction